And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the findings of an investigation into what actually sparked one of Oregon's worst wildfire disasters. Experts tell people throughout the West Coast how to prepare their homes for the upcoming wildfire season, and how research links a lack of affordable housing and hunger in Western states. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 20th, 2025. I'm Minette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. The Oregon Department of Forestry's investigation finds that embers raining down on Santiam Canyon from the Beechey Creek fire, not down power lines, caused the fires that killed five people and burned hundreds of homes in 2020. Its main conclusion is that the utility giant's power lines were not to blame for the fire on Labor Day night. That finding sharply contrasts with the Portland jury ruling in June 2023. The jury found PacifiCorp was responsible after hearing from a lawyer.
This was a tragedy, and it didn't have to happen. And for the Santiam Canyon fire, this case is about one common denominator, one common thread that runs through all the evidence, and it's an obvious one. It's power lines. The warning signs were overwhelming, and they were everywhere. Warning signs like this forecast, showing the entire state of Oregon at extreme or critical levels of fire danger. And PacifiCorp did nothing. The Labor Day storm. There was a forecasted east wind event with 65 to 75 mile per hour winds. There have been major east wind events in Oregon, even in our recent history. Events like the Tillamook burn, which was in the 30s and the 40s, and burned hundreds of thousands of acres. More recently, the Eagle Creek fire in 2017 in the Columbia River Gorge. You can still see the fire scar.
Juries have awarded millions to some fire victims in the Santiam Canyon trying to rebuild their lives, while others have reached settlements. Experts are advising people to work together in their neighborhoods to reduce their risk of fire in the upcoming wildfire season. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
As Los Angeles starts to recover from the firestorm, people are looking for ways to harden their homes against future mega blazes. Experts say the massive destruction from the Palisades and Eaton fires has some people discouraged, thinking there's nothing they can do to defend their homes. But Michelle Steinberg with the National Fire Protection Association says homeowners can significantly reduce their risk.
Home survival is down to making sure that the exterior of the home cannot carry ignition, and by that we mean non-combustible roofing, siding, good windows that aren't going to crack under heat.
The home ignition zone is the 5-foot area around your structure, so anything within that perimeter, including decks, porches, and fences, needs to be made of non-combustible material. And screens on all vents work to prevent embers from being sucked up into the home. California's statewide building code is considered one of the strongest in the country. It specifies how buildings should be designed and maintained and how they should be sited with appropriate defensible space. Steinberg adds that the state helps people find fire-safe materials.
They actually list products that meet those standards. You can actually find manufacturers and people that provide those products on the California State Fire Marshal's website.
Experts also caution against putting dry wood mulch or climbing vegetation up against the house. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Research shows there's a direct correlation between unstable housing and food insecurity. Isabel Charlet reports on how experts say a Washington state rent stabilization bill is an important tool for ending hunger.
While affordable housing advocates across the state have been cheering on Washington's rent stabilization bill in Olympia, so have organizations fighting hunger in the state. Claire Lane, director of the Anti-Hunger and Nutrition Coalition, stands behind the bill, which would limit yearly rent increases to 7%. Lane says her coalition partners with housing advocates because if someone is housing insecure, they are also likely to be food insecure.
Really, the most important thing to take away from that is we're not going to be able to solve hunger in Washington until we can ensure that people have more stable, more affordable housing.
Washington's rent stabilization bill has passed the House and is now in the Senate. Votes for the bill have largely been along party lines, with Republicans arguing it will result in less housing and higher rents. Along with capping increases, the rent stabilization bill requires landlords to give tenants 6 months' notice for significant rent increases. Lane says having more time is key to supporting people having enough food. She explains that if a family only has 2 months to move because of a rent hike, they will prioritize prioritize paying for housing over food.
And that's where you start cutting back on your grocery. That's where you start skipping dinner or you start skipping breakfast.
Lane points to new data from the University of Washington focused on lower income households, showing over half the participants experience food insecurity. Lane says the data shows food insecurity in the state is widespread, especially in communities of color.
70% of Hispanic respondents compared to 54% of non-Hispanic respondents experience food insecurity. Those are huge numbers no matter how you look at it, but the disparity is obvious.
Democrats are confident the rent stabilization bill will pass this year. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
In our KBOO News Health Beat tonight, about 1.4 million Oregonians are enrolled in Medicaid, which in our state is called the Oregon Health Plan. In addition, more than 944,000 Oregonians are enrolled in Medicare. So about 40% of the state's population depends on these programs. Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden had some tough questions for the nominee President Trump picked to lead these programs in the nation. Here's what he said at the hearing for Dr. Oz.
Our nominee would oversee the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and be responsible for the health and well-being of over 160 million Americans. Dr. Oz is the second Trump nominee to come before the committee this year with a record of dodging Medicare and Social Security taxes. This tax loophole hurts Medicare and has benefited Dr. Oz by $440,000 in the last 3 years. The doctor will testify about his concern for Medicare's well-being, yet he is unwilling to pay the same taxes that millions of Americans pay out of every paycheck. So what that means is the person who's nominated to run Medicare thinks that it's acceptable to not pay his taxes into Social Security and Medicare like nurses and firefighters do out of every paycheck. The nominee has been a big promoter of private for-profit health insurance that too often displays little interest in protecting older people who enroll in these plans. And I have seen it as the former director of the Oregon Gray Panthers. We're especially concerned that seniors signing up for these plans are being lured by deceptive marketing and too-good-to-be-true benefit packages. Then they get walloped by business practices that often delay and deny care. When he ran for the Senate, Dr. Oz proposed putting all seniors into private Medicare Advantage plans, leaving traditional Medicare, which serves almost half the Medicare population, those folks, their coverage would just wither on the vine, traditional Medicare. Dr. Oz has demonstrated no interest at all in improving traditional Medicare for the 34 million Americans that count on this program. That'll be a big priority for us going forward. Dr. Oz has made a lucrative career out of advertising these for-profit insurance options, targeting seniors with shady marketing tactics on his television program. He even went so far as to sign up to be an insurance salesman himself. Dr. Oz has used this program to promote some of the most ludicrous wellness grifting that I've heard about to date. Green coffee extract, raspberry ketones, supplements for cancer prevention. Several weeks ago, this committee heard a slew of similarly misleading claims from another unqualified Trump nominee. Now our country is facing the biggest measles outbreak in decades, while the Trump administration touts the benefits of cod liver oil and terrifies parents about vaccinating their kids. Meanwhile, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and congressional Republicans are gearing up to deal the biggest blow to Medicaid in history. These cuts to Medicaid are going to be devastating for adults and those with disabilities. It could destroy care in nursing homes as we know it, and it's going to mean ripping health insurance away from millions of families struggling to get by. So if confirmed, Dr. Oz is going to be responsible for executing whatever destruction is brought down on the Medicaid program by the cuts Republicans are preparing to make. He would be responsible for the premium hikes for families who purchase their own health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. Dr. Oz would be in charge of these programs. He'd be calling the shots about what gets cut and what stays. He'd be the one to allow or stop any attempts by Elon Musk and his Doge Brigade to control Medicare and Medicaid payment systems. Republicans and those like Dr. Oz are all too happy to ignore the predatory tactics for-profit insurers the that they use to deny and delay care for patients who are trying just to get decent and good quality care. Families across the country want to know that their health care is going to be protected and that premiums are affordable. Instead, Republicans march ahead with plans to take an axe to health insurance. They want to put for-profit insurance companies and private equity firms that make money off denying and delaying coverage in the driver's seat of America's health care. That's not what the American people voted for. It's not what they deserve. Based on the evidence I've just laid out, the American people have a variety of reasons to believe Dr. Oz will be fully on board with the Trump and Republican effort to cut Medicaid and to coddle the for-profit insurance companies. Dr. Oz, I was listening carefully to your remarks, and you talked about cherishing Medicaid, and I think that's a very good sentiment. So I want to ask about how we're going to do that. Will you agree, since you want to cherish Medicaid, to oppose any cuts to the Medicaid program? And I want a yes or no, because we all agree that we need to do more to fight fraud and such matters. But what I want to know, yes or no, is since you cherish Medicaid, will you agree to oppose cuts in the Medicaid program?
I cherish Medicaid, and I've worked within the Medicaid environment quite extensively.
That's the question, doctor. The question is, will you oppose cuts to this program you say you cherish?
I want to make sure that the patients today and in the future have resources to protect them if they get ill. The way you protect Medicaid is by making sure that it's viable at every level, which includes having enough practitioners to afford the services, paying them enough to do what you request of them, and making sure that patients are able to actually use Medicaid.
Let the record show that I asked a witness who said he cherishes this program, will you agree to oppose cuts? And he would not answer a yes or no question. Let me ask you about rural communities, because they get hit by Medicaid cuts if they go through like a wrecking ball. It is going to be devastating to rural America. We've got a lot of senators who care about this. The Oregon County with the highest share of residents who get their health insurance through Medicaid is Malheur County on the border with Idaho. By the way, this is an area that Donald Trump won in the election by 70%. Because I want you to be able to do more to cherish Medicaid and help people, I'd like to invite you to come visit Malheur County and see what this really means to rural communities. I've had more than 1,100 of these town hall meetings, and we'd make you the guest at one. If you're confirmed, will you come?
If confirmed, I commit to visiting with you if you'll teach me your jump shot.
I like that part, but I'd like to know, will you come to Malheur County? I can make sure there's a basketball
court. I promise you I will be with you in Mount County or everywhere if you wish to travel within Oregon.
Okay. First 60 days, so we can do it while it really counts when these cuts are being debated.
I just want to ask somebody within CMS what the rules are, but if I'm allowed to do it, I'll be there in 60 days.
All right, good. Let me ask you now about how we're going to rein in DOGE, because people often say that I'm a privacy hawk, and I like that. But the fact is, everybody in the Senate is a privacy hawk because of DOGE, because we are very troubled about the prospect of DOGE going in there to this treasure trove of healthcare data that has all the information on these patients. What are you going to do more to protect them? Because right now, we know nothing from this administration about how they are going to protect the patients, and we have asked and ask some more. What are you going to do, if confirmed, to protect people against overreach by DOGE on health care?
Senator Wyden, I, like you, have not been involved with DOGE. I only reading in the papers and keeping up the news in that fashion. I have treasured building teams my whole career. The first thing I am going to do is
confirm. So you have talked to no one in the administration about DOGE to date?
No.
Didn't talk to Secretary Kennedy?
No.
Never talked to him? Okay. Go ahead, please.
I know that in order to run a large organization, you have to get people excited about going to work. They have to see the vision that you have, and there's a fine line between vision and hallucination. Other people have to see it for it to be a vision. So I intend to spend my first precious few weeks in the agency, if confirmed, speaking to the staff, raising morale, getting people excited, and addressing what's going on with DOGE. I will know a lot more if I'm confirmed by this committee.
Do you think this ought to be a priority issue for you if you're confirmed? Is protect doing more to protect privacy at DOGE?
I'd like to know more what's going on with privacy at DOGE. I've read the CMS homepage. The website says that only people who have gone through a training program are allowed to see the records, and they can only read the records. They can't touch them.
I've got one last question. Do you believe in a nursing home there should be a registered nurse available around the clock 24/7. The reason I ask this is because that is the rule that is coming up, but there's going to be an effort to roll it back. Do you think we ought to have nursing homes without nurses?
Senator Wyden, it's a complicated question. Because
no, it's
we
not.
Don't...
We need a nurse in a nursing home. Not too complicated.
I actually think we need a nurse who will work in a nursing home. And in many nursing homes, that's become a problem. I believe we can provide quality of care equivalent to having a nurse in that nursing home using tools and technologies, including telemedicine. I want to be flexible enough so that we deal with a massive crisis that we have a lot of people aging. We're going to go from 68 million people on Medicaid to 90 million people on Medicaid over the next decade.
Right now, the proposal gives rural communities 5 years to come into compliance. So I think we can get this done. But if you're confirmed, I hope you won't take the nurses out of nursing homes, because there's going to be an effort in the Senate to do that.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio, then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, cloudy with occasional light rain, a low 46. Tomorrow's weather, rain with a high around 50. Today in history, on this date in 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson ordered troops to protect the Selma, Montgomery civil rights marchers. Our quote of the day is from Martin Luther King Jr. "If the worst in American life lurked in Selma's dark streets, the best of American instincts arose passionately from across the nation to overcome it." President Trump's plans to impose a host of tariffs have had a number of ups and downs recently. Now the European Union itself is changing course in response. KBOO News reporter Josh Salem tells us more.
European Union officials announced today that they would delay their retaliation against Donald Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs until the middle of next month. This also includes the 50% levies on American whiskey they previously threatened. The move is apparently intended to give officials time to refine the list of involved items, while also allowing more time to strike a deal with the United States. The first wave of EU tariffs were originally set to kick in on March 31st, with a second wave coming a few weeks later. Maroš Šefčovič, who is in charge of negotiating trade matters for the EU, said, quote, "The EU and the U.S. enjoy the largest bilateral trade and investment relationship in the world. It should be a priority for both sides to protect and further develop this relationship," end quote. Šefčovič apparently talked to his American counterparts last week. He added today that he had learned that the Trump administration did not want to negotiate on trade until after April 2nd, when the United States is expected to announce a new and even broader round of tariffs. The delay in negotiation has complicated the original start date for Europe's retaliatory tariffs, which EU policymakers had always hoped would be a tool to force the Americans to the negotiating table. The EU previously announced its tariff package last week, in response to steel and aluminum tariffs that began on March 12th. The European plan was originally meant to take place over two phases. The first one, which is now delayed, would have allowed tariffs that were instituted during Trump's first presidency and then suspended during the Biden administration to come back at even higher levels. Whiskey, motorcycles, and a host of other products would have been affected. The second phase would have placed new tariffs on a wide variety of American products, including items like lingerie, soy products, and machinery. Those tariffs were set to begin in mid-April. Now, all of the tariffs are expected to take hold next month, adding heftier levies on some $28 billion worth of exports. Trump already said he would impose a 200% tariff on European champagne, wine, and other alcohol to retaliate against Europe's plan against American whiskey. That threat in particular incited alarm among European leaders from wine-producing nations, including Italy and France. Whiskey was originally placed on the tariff list during Trump's first trade war in 2018. It may have been a way to target Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, who was then a majority leader, as bourbon is an important export from his home state. Details on the new tariffs that the United States might impose on April 2nd remain scant, but Europe has been bracing for their impact. Trump has at times threatened levies as high as 25% on cars, which would affect German automakers. Some Europeans expect further tariffs on copper, wood, and shipbuilding materials. Christine Lagarde, the president of the European Central Bank, said the tariffs were being used as blackmail. She added if the EU responded by striking trade deals both internally and with other trading partners, it could offset those potential consequences. Kentucky and Indiana, the two states with the highest percentage of their gross domestic product coming from EU trading, both ceded their electoral votes to Trump in the recent presidential election. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The White House attacks the judge who moved to block deportation of Venezuelans. Ukraine's president agrees to a limited ceasefire, and advocates say closing the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will put consumers on the hook for junk charges and predatory fees. For more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2025 Talks.
The judge in this case is essentially trying to say that the president doesn't have the executive authority to deport foreign terrorists from our American soil.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt calls the federal judge who ordered a stop to flights carrying accused Venezuelan gang members a Democratic activist. District Judge James Boasberg has given the administration one more day to prove it didn't defy his court order to stop the planes. Leavitt says they don't have any other flights to El Salvador planned, but the public should expect more deportations. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is agreeing to a limited ceasefire with Russia following a phone call with President Donald Trump. Trump says Ukraine will turn over power plants to the U.S. in repayment and to protect them. Russia says it also wants the West to stop sharing intelligence. Earlier this week, the administration's DOGE team took control of the U.S. Institute of Peace, physically removing its president and replacing him. USIP is suing, arguing that since it's an independent nonprofit funded by a congressional grant, not an executive agency, the administration lacks that authority. The American Federation of Teachers is suing the Department of Education over removal of the online application for income-driven student loan repayment. The Biden-era plan that offered lower monthly payments and faster repayment to millions is stuck in limbo and faces a highly critical White House, which is now formally moving to close the entire agency. Sarah Saddlemeyer with the think tank New America says borrowers are being left scrambling.
Slashing federal workers, slashing contracts. It's hard to serve people when you cut staff and resources in a system that's already underfunded.
Congressman Mike Flood of Deep Red, Nebraska is the latest Republican getting boos and angry demands at a town hall. Many are upset by proposed cuts to Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security.
I always try to deal with my constituents with a great deal of respect. I hear them. I know that there are some angry people.
The fate of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau may be decided by suits now in federal court. Christine Chen Zinner with Americans for Financial Reform says the CFPB, an early target for the DOGE cost-cutting, has saved consumers billions in canceled debts and restitution.
This is a law enforcement agency that protects everyday people when financial institutions cheat and defraud them. And in the short 14 years that it's been around, it has already recovered $21 billion for everyday people.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Oregon select tribes are regaining their subsistence rights on their ancestral lands. With that story and more, here's Brian Bull from Eugene, Oregon with National Native News.
Navajo officials are demanding an explanation and apology from the Trump administration for the removal of online articles about the Navajo code talkers. These were the estimated 400 Navajo Marines who used their unwritten language to thwart Japanese imperialist forces during World War II. The Japanese were never able to decipher the code talkers' radio transmissions, which were used to communicate the movements of American forces across the Pacific theater. The Navajos deployed during the fierce Battle of Iwo Jima in 1945 are credited with helping the Marines take the island's stronghold. Crystal M. Curley is the speaker of the 25th Navajo Nation Council. She says the White House's executive orders removing all references to diversity, equity, and inclusion is behind the deletion of code talker articles from U.S. military websites.
Our Navajo code talkers are seen as heroes, community leaders, healers, protectors. So when we heard that the Navajo code talkers' contribution, their legacy, their history was being erased, the first thing that came to my mind was, this can't be true.
Curley says the omission was shocking to her and other delegates of the Navajo Council, given the sacrifices made by the code talkers.
Many of our Navajo veterans, Navajo code talker families and communities are very frustrated. As of right now, many of our Navajo people don't feel that reassurance or that confidence that we are appreciated or even recognized.
Of the 400 Navajo code talkers, only two are alive today. Curley says she's heard secondhand that the articles recognizing their contributions to the Allied war efforts will be restored, but she's not yet heard that directly from any official with the White House or Department of Defense.
I would just see if press releases, other media outlets that say it was a mistake and that they will be rescinded and restored. However, the council has not received any official apology or any type of form of communication of why it happened or if it will be fully 100% restored.
Curley says the Navajo Council is working on a resolution to affirm the Navajo Nation's government-to-government relationship with the United States and that their contributions to national defense isn't a DEI matter. Nearly half a century after losing their right to hunt, fish, and gather on their ancestral lands, the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians have just regained it. In 1980, the Siletz and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife agreed to create a reservation for the tribe. In exchange, the Siletz gave up their subsistence rights.
At the time, we were told by the state, this is meant to be permanent forever.
Siletz Tribal Chair Dolores Pigsley says decades later, state, federal, and tribal officials agree this consent decree was a biased product of the times. Oregon Representative Val Hoyle and Senator Jeff Merkley each introduced legislation to modify the decree, which President Biden signed in December 2023. Last week, the Fish and Wildlife Commission rescinded the original 1980 agreement, the last step in restoring the Siletz's hunting and fishing rights.
We'll have a celebration. We're happy and we're going to exercise our right. People have been applying for tags. Now they're able to actually feed their families.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
Under President Trump's leadership, the Pentagon's removed and then turned around to restore information about the Tuskegee Airmen and the Navajo Code Talkers. KBOO's Dave Johnson has more on that.
The U.S. Department of Defense struck a defiant tone after it restored military records of a long list of U.S. war heroes. Details regarding many service veterans, including Native American Code Talkers, the Tuskegee Airmen, Iwo Jima Marine veteran Ira Hayes, and Baseball Hall of Famer Jackie Robinson follow public outcry from veterans' families. President Donald Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's efforts to purge diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, from U.S. government websites follow a similar pattern after the Pentagon removed a webpage featuring the service of Major General Charles Calvin Rogers, a Black Medal of Honor recipient who served in Vietnam. Details of Rogers' service were also restored after a similar outcry. Trump's DEI order caused alarm from veterans and others who fought for inclusion and recognition for servicemen and servicewomen. Allison Harvey Green, the daughter of one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, retired Air Force General Lieutenant Colonel James Harvey III, says, quote, "I was angry. It's been very disturbing. We fought so long to get his history out." The specific details regarding the decision to remove and the process to restore those service records is not entirely clear. However, in a statement to the Guardian newspaper, Defense Department spokesperson Sean Parnell said, quote, "I think the president and secretary have been very clear on this, that anybody that says in the Department of Defense that diversity is our strength is frankly incorrect. I think the single dumbest phrase in military history is, our diversity is our strength," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Dave Johnson.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 20th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Dave Johnson, Althea Billings, Isabel Charlet, and Suzanne Potter. The producer is Annette Newell and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 VH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In-Depth, up next.